your host, Julia Cardoso, and you're listening to Anxious Ramblings. Here we're going to speak about all the crazy thoughts in your head that you're afraid to say out loud. So happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. Hope you guys enjoy your day with your children. So for today's episode, we're going to hear from Becky. She's a 22-year-old with schizoaffective disorder, and she's going to be speaking about her experience as an inpatient and the progression of her life with this mental illness. Before we get into that, I'd like to talk a little bit more about some background information and some little kind of key terms that maybe you guys aren't aware of. Just wanted to bring some important facts up that may help you understand a little more of this illness and what it's like to receive inpatient care. And inpatient care is basically care given to a patient admitted into a hospital or extended care facility. And basically they receive intensive individual or group mental health services with the goal of making sure that they're really well prepared to get back into community. And before they do so, they receive outpatient services as well so that they are really able to integrate back into the home, into school, whatever they were doing before the incident happened. Because usually people can either be voluntarily or involuntarily admitted into inpatient care facilities. And when it's involuntary, it's usually after an incident that compromises a person's safety or the safety of those around them. And another thing I wanted to bring up was this idea of hallucinations. And she's going to talk a little bit about, she's mentioned it a little bit, but I just wanted to make a little more clarity when it comes to what hallucinations actually are. And people who suffer from schizophrenia, who abuse medication, to abuse substances, who suffer from substance abuse, dementia, they all sometimes experience hallucinations as well. And hallucinations are sensations that appear real, but they're created by your mind. And there are different types of visual hallucinations involve seeing things that aren't really there. There's olfactory hallucinations involve the sense of smell, and then auditory hallucinations that are the most common. It's like when you hear someone talking, you hear someone in your head telling you to do something. And there's also tactile hallucinations that involve you feel like someone's touching you, you feel movement in your body, someone's holding you, stuff like that. And I just wanted to bring this up because I feel like a lot of the times we're not really aware of what these differences and what the types of hallucinations are. And I was watching a documentary yesterday on Discovery Health called Born Schizophrenic, and it's about a couple with two young children. I think her name is Janny, and the son is Brody. Janny is 11 years old now, and Brody, I think he's like 5 or 4, I'm not really sure. But Janny was diagnosed with schizophrenia, and now they're trying to figure out a diagnosis for their son, but they're not really sure. He also has autism. And in this documentary, you can really see how the hallucinations, the delusions, and just how the illness really takes place inside of Janny's head, and how she deals with that on the outside world, like outside of her illness. And then you can really see the progression of how she really improved. And I don't want to give away too much, but I really suggest that you guys watch it. And let's get into the interview.
My name is Becky Gonzalez Sartoli, and I'm 22. I live in Pennsylvania. I have schizoaffective disorder. I was diagnosed about 2 years ago. This coming summer.
Okay.
And that's about it.
And can you explain what schizoaffective disorder is in your own words?
Yeah, schizoaffective disorder is a mental illness in the schizophrenia family, but it's coupled with a mood disorder, either bipolar or depressive. So you get the symptoms like hallucinations and delusions and disorganized thoughts, and you get the emotional symptoms like severe depression and anxiety, which I get in my case. It affects less than 1% of the population, and it usually shows up in young adulthood. And it's terrifying while also being really annoying, and it takes a lot from you, but there's no quick fix for it.
Like that. And can you talk more about like the progression of it? Like, when did you realize that something was wrong, or how did you go about getting help and stuff like that?
Well, when I was in high school, I had a lot of issues relating to a lot of stuff, and I struggled a lot, but I got misdiagnosed as bipolar, and I was put on the wrong medication, and it was just a struggle the whole time. So I was taking this wrong medication and not taking care of myself and not taking medication the right way. And I went to college away from home, and I kind of just got worse and worse and fell apart, and my symptoms just completely got out of control. And by the end of the school year, I was a complete mess. I really had no control over my life, and I was having hallucinations and complete delusions as to who I was and what I was doing and what my purpose was, where I was. And so finally I went back home, not really my choice, but I went back home, and I had to drop out of school. I went through the next year in a really depressive state because, you know, I had all these hopes and dreams of, like, finishing school and being successful in school, and I had my dream job, but none of it worked out. And then I finally realized, like, this medication that I'm not taking it right. It's really messing me up. I don't know who I am anymore. So I stopped the medication. Never a good idea to stop your medication.
Right.
And I had a pretty bad episode and ended up hospitalized. And that's when I finally realized, you know, I need to really take this seriously and figure out what's wrong with me. And finally, when I was in the hospital, I decided to be, like, 100% open and honest this time. Because in the past, I had, you know, tried to hide a lot of what was going on.
Right.
You don't want to, like, you don't want to sound crazy. You don't want to...
Yeah.
You know, and so I was like, you know, I really need to figure out, because I don't want to be like this anymore.
Definitely. And can you want to talk about your experience that you had in the hospital? Like, what types of stigmas that you experienced based on your diagnosis, and how was it like in there for you?
Well, it was a small hospital and a small area, and it was a little frustrating at times because the majority of the people there were there for other reasons, and I was the only person there for any kind of schizo illness, and I felt like really isolated, and was like, no one really gets what's going on, and I have no idea what's going on. I just want to talk to someone about what's going on. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have anyone to later relate to, and my doctors weren't really understanding where I was coming from. Mm-hmm. And people, they didn't, you know, they were like interested in what I was going through, but more in a kind of like a morbid curiosity way. Mm-hmm. I've had people, other inpatients, say that they thought that all schizos should be locked up in packed rooms. Wow. And then just like not talk to me. And
that's crazy.
Just stuff like that. And the second time I had to be hospitalized, I already had the diagnosis of schizoaffective, and I went to the emergency room because I was feeling suicidal and I was having auditory hallucinations, but I was still very lucid and I was aware of where I was and what was going on, and I just realized I needed to check myself in because the medicine I was taking wasn't working the way it was supposed to. So I talked to the intake nurse very calmly. Everything was fine, and it was just like, I need, you know, to be checked out and need to be on a new medication regimen, and I can't do it at home.
Right.
And as soon as talking to her, I thought everything was going to be fine. I was going to be put into the same ward as I was last time, but I ended up, took the ambulance to the hospital, and they put me in adult one ward, which was the ward for older patients, about like 65 and older, older patients with dementia and mental disabilities that were unable to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really upset because I knew that the nurse just saw the word skids on my sheet, and mm-hmm. she automatically assumed the worst, that I was like unable to be in reality. And she put me in a place that had no agency or scheduling. It was basically just a holding cell. There was no schedule, no, like, you couldn't go to the cafeteria. There was nothing. It was, and the nurses on that floor, they hung out in their nurses' room, and they were practically trained just not to listen to you at all. And so I felt stuck there, like, and it was just, it was awful. And I just, I was miserable because it was like, there's, I'm not getting any help here. It was basically just a holding cell. They held you there. And there was no way to get out until I finally was able to talk to my psychiatrist. And she's like, no, you need to move to adult four. And I was like, thank you.
That's ridiculous. And I feel like a lot of that can be definitely, well, the stigma definitely can be helped if people just educated themselves. You clearly didn't belong in there, and the nurse just kind of isolated you, or they put you in there, and it's like a lot of these stigmas can definitely begin with just education of, you know, the different types of mental illness. Just because you see that diagnosis doesn't mean that that person can't function a certain way, and you can't put these labels on people. So that's really ridiculous.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so what are some of the, you said that there are things that doctors keep from us about some of the antipsychotic medications. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I don't think that a lot of doctors, especially doctors that work in like a system, like a community counseling type deal, I don't think they tell you the full risks and side effects, especially for younger patients. Because when I was younger, it was like, take this medication, we're not going to tell you any side effects. And I've had terrible side effects from some of the medications I've given, from a lot of weight gain to hand tremors and to not being able to go up a flight of stairs without passing out because of my blood pressure. Mm-hmm. And every time I would voice these concerns, I could just, you know, just wait it out, just wait a month, just wait another month, it will pass. Or the worst, like, well, you have to either choose your sanity or gaining a few pounds. And I hated that.
Right.
The apathy towards these real issues I had, APs and weight gain. And it's like, I don't feel like we're given much choice in our treatment, because it's always either suck it up and deal with it, or stop taking the meds and end up hospitalized or worse. So these doctors are like, instead of trying to find alternative solutions to our health problems, we're just these problem patients that are not taking their meds.
Exactly.
But it's a real issue, because when I was taking these APs when I was younger, I gained 80 pounds, and I was not warned. There's no, and they were just like, no, you have to take it. And I had no choice. I was underage, I had no choice. And it sucked a lot. And after losing all that, and then after because I lost it after I stopped taking the medication, and then I was put back on APs, and I started gaining again. And my PA was just like, there's nothing we can do. You just kind of have to suck it up. And I'm like, I feel like that's not good enough.
And I feel like once they see certain diagnosis, they put you on this treatment plan. It's like, there's other options as well. There's other things that people can try. It's not just, well, you know, medication is part of it, but there's other things as well. And it's like, there should be a thing that you work with your doctor to figure it out, not like your doctor's like, here, take these and go away. It's like, it's really, it's a horrible thing to deal with.
Yeah, exactly. I think that we need doctors that are more just, not like, take these pills. We need doctors that tell you how to like adjust your whole life, and because recovery is this total life upheaval, and you need support from people around you, and you need a total life adjustment.
Exactly.
To change like your diet and your physical fitness and just everything helps.
Exactly.
Just change everything. It's not just like take these pills and keep everything the same.
Right.
That's not too much, but they're just like, take the pills, you'll feel better.
Right.
No, it doesn't work like that.
Exactly. And I wanted to ask you, how do you think your diagnostic label impacted the relationships and connections you had with other people in your life?
Well, I'm really very secretive. And also, it's the schizoaffective, it's made social relationships very difficult to make. And that's part of the actual illness itself, like forming connections and just, you know, being social in general. I tend to isolate. But with the people I do know, I'm very secretive. And the last two relationships I've had, I didn't tell the other person. It's something that, you know, you just haven't talked about, and which is something that needs to change, but it's a scary thing to say, and definitely, it's something that I feel like if you tell someone, they're like, whoa, and it could either make or break a relationship, and it's scary. And I think my relationship, though, with my mother, who knows, has changed a lot. It's gotten stronger.
That's great.
Sometimes I feel like she doesn't really understand, and I believe that she can't fully understand, but she tries, and that means a lot.
Definitely.
Yeah. But with friends, it's like, it's a tough.
I bet. That's great that your relationship with your mother got stronger. And yeah, honestly, I feel like all I can really ask for others is just to try to understand, because they're not going to ever get it.
Yeah.
But as long as they're supportive and positive and trying to be as understanding as they can, like, that helps a lot.
Exactly, yeah.
So what has kept you going towards recovery, and what keeps you going to, like, what's driving you to keep this positive outlook and really getting yourself help that you deserve?
Well, after my hospital stay when I was 20, when I finally, like, opened up to recovery, mm-hmm, and got the treatment that I needed, I realized, you know, that there is a reality that I can be okay, and that I have the ability to be a good person who's happy and healthy, and that I deserve to be happy and healthy.
Definitely.
And that it feels good to be happy and
that's
healthy.
That's great.
And that's the thing that can happen. And I really, you know, it's just every day really is hard, and you have to make that choice every single day, because it's so easy just to fall back into bad choices and bad thoughts, and it's too easy just to stay in bed all day and feel awful and to just not take your meds that day, but you have to fight every single day.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like every day you wake up, you have to choose recovery. It's like, exactly, choose recovery or stay in bed and,
yeah,
don't choose recovery.
Yes. Fall into that deep hole again.
Exactly. So it's,
keep crawling out.
Mhm. It's really, and it's also, I think it really has to do with, you know, trying your best to stay positive. Even if you have a bad day, you know, what I like to do when I have a bad day is, like, reflect on it. Like, you know, maybe I'll learn from this day and tomorrow will be better. So I'm always hoping for, you know, if there's a bad day, the next day will be a little better. So
yeah,
keeps me going.
Yeah.
So what are, I didn't write this down, but do you have any advice for someone who may have, may be in the similar circumstances that you were in?
Do you want to? Well, I would say that don't be afraid of getting hospitalized, because I know a lot of people who are like, you know, going to a doctor, even people without schizoaffective, are like, going to a doctor, going to a psychiatrist is fine, you know, getting medication. But honestly, like, going and getting an inpatient care can really change your life for the positive. Like, it's scary, and it's scary sounding. And it's, you know, it's a really big step. But it's really life-changing, and it's, like, kind of like like a reset button. And you spend, you know, a lot of time thinking. There's a lot of free time to think about recovery and how you're going to change your life for the better. And there's people there that understand you and what you're going through, at least try to. And, you know, you can make some real connections. I mean, I met my best friend there, and we're still friends to this day.
That's great.
Sounds yeah, wonderful. And I mean, it's good because when you're in the hospital, you get, you know, like 24/7 care. You make sure, like, you don't have to worry about keeping your appointments or worry about a waiting list. Like, you get to see the therapist, you get to see the psychiatrist every day, and you get, there's a, like, lesson plans and activities and stuff. And I mean, it's like a nice reset. I mean, I don't want to make it seem like it's a vacation, because it's not. It's a lot of work. But, you know, it's, if it's what you need, don't be afraid of it.
Exactly. I think a lot of how it's portrayed in the media makes it seem like this really scary place. But definitely. I feel like it's not showing that. It's actually pretty helpful.
Exactly.
And sometimes you just need to get away and just focus on your treatment. And I think inpatient care can definitely be good for that.
Exactly. I mean, you get away from, like, stress. I mean, there's no phones, there's no cell phones, there's no computers. But, I mean, you can still call your family and friends, and you get visitors, and there's the TV. So it's not like you're cut off completely from the world. But you are cut off from, like, a lot of stress, you know?
Exactly.
Like, you don't get to have to look at your bills or look at your cell phone and, like, look at your emails. And it's just, it's good.
That's great.
You know, I mean, it's tough, but you gotta keep going.
Exactly. Well, thanks for doing this with me.
Yep. Thanks really for having me.
Nice to have you. Nice speaking to you. All right, so thank you guys for listening to Anxious Rambling. The next episode, I'm going to talk to Catherine. The topic that we're going to be discussing is going to be sexuality and learning disabilities and how those affect mental illnesses and your mental health. And thank you all for listening. Thank you, Becky, for allowing me to share your story, and everyone who made this episode possible. Hope you tune in next time.